positives, though. The positives was I thought Rome and Caleb looked like the future of the Chicago Bears.
They were celebrating. They got the passing touchdown out of the way, you should say, right? They're celebrating. They're feeling good. You just want to see more of it.
I would like to not see the timeout be used there, but...
Okay, okay. I thought we were staying positive here.
I am happy.
I
am happy.
It's a good point.
They got their first touchdowns. It was really unique to see them.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Robbie Gould,
yeah,
the former Bears kicker who's doing some work with the Marquee Sports Network.
Post-game show.
Well, he does
the show during the week. I'm sorry. He does.
Yeah, Dave does a post-game
show.
Dave does
a post-game show.
I told you I went back and watched it.
You watched the.
I went back and watched the post-game show.
Dave always provides good analysis. Robbie Gould has his own show, and I think he does the fifth inning, doesn't he?
Okay.
Or is that Zach?
Yeah, I think that's Zach. That's pretty funny, though.
Yeah. No, but Robbie, you know, it's him saying that about Rome and Caleb Williams. We're going to hear a lot about those guys this week, about this chemistry and the post-game stuff and post-practice stuff.
I appreciate what he's saying because they're 22-year-old guys. One guy drafted first overall, the other guy ninth pick in the draft.
Great.
I get that.
I know.
DJ Moore
is
27 years old. And he's the guy that has the 4-year extension.
They just paid him
for $110 million after this season. So he's going to be here for 5 more years.
So
I just think, let's not forget about him.
I don't think that we should. I don't think they are.
Because he's our guest on Mondays.
I know. Well, we can't forget him. But I do wonder what effect some of this has on a guy in DJ Moore. Number one. The noise is the noise. They can block that out. You know, Robbie Gould, now that he's a member of the media, he's easy to ignore if you're a player in the locker room. Guys like us saying what we're going to say about the chemistry developing between Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams because they're rookies and, boy, they're going to grow together. Mm. That can be easy to ignore if you're DJ Moore. But I do wonder what effect it has maybe as you see them staying after practice, as you kind of – find him targeting or throwing more to Rome Odunze in key situations. You wonder what effect that has, and you start to wonder, what about me? And it's human nature, right? Especially for wide receivers. As well-balanced as DJ Moore is, you do wonder, as this begins to evolve, this relationship between Odunze and Caleb Williams, how he's going to process all of it. Even though he'll say the right things, what's he really thinking? What effect it has on the Bears' offense? DJ Moore has got to be your number one option. And mm-hmm. I think that the targets have to reflect that. And I think he's got to be more, as we sort of facetiously referred to in the first segment, he's got to be more than decoy Moore. He's got to be the guy that is the focal point of your passing game and the best player on your offense. And that's what he was last year. That's why they paid him. And that's what he, you know, has yet to be this year, really, in 3 games. He's been dependable, but I do think that they could lean on him a little bit more, and I think they're going to get better if they do.
Listen, I think that you need a lot of players to contribute to what you're doing if you are Caleb Williams. I think it's great that he feels a kinship and a friendship with a guy who's kind of his own age, and they came in together. You know who's one of his best friends that we haven't seen is Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen is an artist as a route runner. He is a third down waiting to happen. You get to third down,
if you say so,
he's going to be open, and you got to find him now.
If you say so.
Well, I mean, the problem
right now it's
is
a rumor.
He's got this heel. He's got this plantar fasciitis, and he has missed 2 games. If it turns out that he can't play this week, and God forbid he's out for another week, then they blew it not by trading for him. I mean, I'm not going to sit here. We should talk about that.
Well, I want to address that part because the second part of it, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say they could have put him on IR and they could have freed him up for 4 weeks.
They could have freed him up for 4 weeks, but again, when you do that, who's replacing him? It doesn't matter who replaces him. You don't replace a guy like that. So the bigger, broader question is what your first question was. Should you just expect this from a 32-year-old guy?
Well, I mean, I think you got to go back.
Part of it?
Let's talk about what they did. they had a chance to take the guy that right now is the best interior pass rusher in the NFL. He had an impact on 18 of the 51 plays that the Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Carter, had an impact on 18 of 51 plays when they beat New Orleans. And what they did is they traded. They traded down to take Darnell Wright and get a fourth-round pick. And they used the fourth-round pick to bring them Keenan Allen.
Both
Keenan Allen not being able to play and Darnell Wright being able to play not necessarily well, looks like they made a terrible decision on that trade.
Okay, one guy at a time, though. I think with Keenan
Thought
Allen...
that's where you were going.
No. With Keenan Allen, I want to focus on what you have from a 32-year-old who is a third-down machine and the route runner that we have seen him... You know, he has a Hall of Fame caliber career right now. Numbers make him guy who's worthy of being a semifinalist. And you're going to see him as a nominated for the Hall of Fame. All those things that make his career special and elite. But if he's 32, you have to expect these kinds of things to pop up. You gave up a fourth-round draft pick, so it was a modest price, looked like a great deal. But now that he has never been part of your offense... Are you trying to replace him? What are you replacing? You don't know. And he's got to come back, and I don't know how much you're going to be able to count on him when he comes back. And when he comes back, what role does he play? I think that Keenan Allen, this is sort of a mystery. Number one, I wonder about his health. Number two, I wonder about he had personal reasons that he did not attend the game on Sunday. It's a little unusual for a guy that professional, the consummate pro, whose contributions were documented on the sideline on Sunday Night Football. And, look at the way he's coaching on the sideline. Him missing is not a small thing. And then where does this go from here? Because if he comes back and he's the guy who's the third or fourth option in this offense, how does he handle that in a contract year?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would be willing to deal with how he handles it if he could just play. I think it would help them immensely if he could play. And I think that what we've seen is they're relying on a guy in Carter that they didn't really – there was a question of whether or not he was going to make the team. There was a question of whether or not he would be on the roster on game day because they still thought Velus Jones – was going to be one of their big return guys. And so now, by virtue of need, he is lining up. He's getting the ball thrown to him quite a bit. It seems like Caleb Williams is interested in using the slot receiver. I just don't know why we can't see the team we thought they were going to field and why they made all this noise about the group they were going to put together if they're not on the field. I'm worried. I'm frankly worried that Keenan Allen, this heel thing, it interrupted his season at the end of last year. He had this heel problem, and now it's back, and it turns out it's plantar fasciitis. That's scary stuff.
Yeah, man. That's not good now, development for a guy his age.
Your plantar fascia is... It is basically your entire bottom of your foot.
Thank you, doctor.
And it presents itself...
Mike Mulligan, podiatrist.
Often, I just know a little bit about it.
I know.
I was covering the Bulls when Michael Jordan had a plantar fasciitis injury, and it was unbelievable because Bob Cousy, it ended his career. Bob Ryan wrote a story, and Jordan had to come out and say, yeah, I understand that Bob Cousy had a really bad one. I got a little straight. It's not a big deal. And he had to criticize Bob Ryan for writing this thing. But it's like that serious an injury that it did stop a guy's professional career. If indeed Keenan Allen, as you say, Hall of Fame credentials, which, by the way, you need to look at what it takes for a wide receiver to get into the Hall of Fame, because he would almost have to double his statistics.
I'm aware, but you look at that. I mean, he's got as good of a case as some of the guys who are waiting in line now.
Six-time Pro Bowler, great player,
yeah.
Okay? And you clearly would be better with him than without him. But I just think that...
at some point in time, too, you got to look at he's making $23 million this year.
And you gave up a fourth-round pick.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the $23 million he's making this year, and you're getting nothing out of him. So I wonder how long the injury will linger. I wonder how quickly, when he returns, he'll be incorporated into the offense. Because does he have to get in line behind, Rome Odunze and DJ Moore. All of a sudden, if Keenan Allen comes back, is he your third option in this offense? He likely is, because if we think that this is just the media making something out of Rome Odunze's chemistry with Caleb Williams, as Robbie Gould alluded to, as we're talking about, and you hear them talk about the extra time at practice and all that thing, this is a real thing developing, and that's why we're talking about it, and that's why it's relevant. It's great because I think that Odunze has those capabilities. He is Ja'Marr Chase in waiting, I think. Mm-hmm. He can be to Caleb Williams what Ja'Marr Chase is to Joe Burrow. I know there's another Burrow reference.
Yeah.
But
by the way, Cincinnati 0-3. Not to get in the way.
But the point is that can see that capability. He's a top 10 pick. Malik Nabers had a great game for the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
You look at Marvin Harrison Jr., what he's doing in Arizona. But Rome Odunze is still on that path. His third game in, he had 112 yards.
But here's the truth of the matter is that whether we talk about DJ Moore or whether we're talking about Keenan Allen or Rome Odunze, if you win, all ills are healed. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is the fact that they have lost two straight games, and the first game they won, they couldn't score an offensive touchdown. So what we're talking about is a non-functioning offense that finally put up some numbers, but not really good function. And we know what those numbers mean. It means that you threw the ball too many times, and you can't do that and win.
Well, that's why I'm waiting for somebody to either call in, text in, and texters are being a little angry today.
Are they really?
To tell us to stop talking about the passing game, because that's the problem with the Bears. Maybe they're too worried about the chemistry between the wide receiver and the quarterback, and they're too concerned about where DJ Moore fits in all of this and if Keenan Allen will come back. Run the football. Block the run.
I mean, listen.
Give it to
–
figure out what running back you want to use on fourth and one.
Well, we know who they should use.
Yeah.
But we know who they are using, and we also know that they cannot run the football because they are cutesy cute, and that is too smash mouth for them. That is the sad reality of where you are three games into the football
season. Is it a sadder reality that maybe they know they can't run the football because they can't block anybody? Is this all – I don't want to say a ruse, but could this be somehow the coaching staff, who's never going to acknowledge this publicly, realizes that when you have a center that is not strong at the point of attack, when you have a guard that you're looking at as a solution, Matt Pryor is just part of the problem. When you have Darnell Wright, who's underachieving in his second year, and you have Tevin Jenkins, who can't stay on the field, and Braxton Jones, who's overmatched, do you just have an offensive line that can't play smash-mouth football? That's what the Bears may have.
We're actually, yesterday, we had a serious conversation about whether or not Matt Pryor should remain as a starter and how good he could be and how much he could help you. Matt Pryor is a guy who is, what, maybe their fifth, sixth lineman? No, I'm sorry, more like their seventh offensive lineman. You know, they went out and they traded for a guy that they brought in, and apparently he's pre-injured as well as Keenan Allen. And so you're looking at Ryan Bates coming in here with a shoulder injury. Now he's on injured reserve. So you wanted to try to replace your highest paid offensive lineman because Nate Davis can't seem to practice, let alone play, right? You can't make the team, you can't make the club from the top. This is a guy that seems more interested in rehabbing than in playing.
But you're stuck.
But you are totally
stuck.
But it's sunk money at this point.
You can't make a statement by doing anything with Nate Davis because your biggest statement so far is that we are a finesse team that needs
him. That's it. That's the problem.
And you don't have an identity as an offense because you've not been able to force any kind of running game, or you haven't been able to commit to anything because you can't block it.
But, I got to go back to this. You know, their roster is flawed. They had three players that didn't play on Sunday. One of them was the backup quarterback. That happens. That guy hopefully doesn't play in a game, but you need him, and he's the backup quarterback. They had two offensive linemen active that stood on the sidelines, and they had another lineman get hurt in the game.
Molly, I know, but
what
I don't.
What the hell is that?
I don't remember any of this coming up during Hard Knocks.
No, not if it was me.
This was definitely edited out.
Why didn't they get into the football stuff?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
This is such a surprise to so many people.
I know.
That the Bears don't.
I know.
They don't have a running game. They can't block it. And, oh, by the way, the receivers are injured. Or the Keenan Allen is injured.
Yeah, yeah.
But we go back to what you said about DeAndre Carter. It's very interesting because when you mentioned his name, my first reaction was, like, oh, at least good thing he's here. Good thing he's there. But they're in a position where they have relied on him way too much. Number one in the return game because Velus Jones, number one choice, failed them. Number two, he's too present in the passing game because Keenan Allen, who they relied on, isn't around. And, oh, by the way, what happened to Tyler Scott? Who hit him? I know he's small, but did somebody put him in a broom closet somewhere?
Honestly,
because where is he?
I have no idea. I thought when he replaced Velus Jones that we would actually see him. I also thought, you know, again, this is the delirium of watching preseason football, that he and the quarterback were developing some kind of chemistry together. Seemed like a guy that could run at top speed down the field. I know he was challenged to catch the ball a year ago, but I thought maybe Caleb threw a better ball.
Yes.
Maybe he'd catch it.
Maybe.
I don't know. We haven't seen that at all.
That was one of those preseason storylines that we overstated and maybe romanticized. But Tyler Scott has been nowhere to be found. I've been surprised that they haven't used him more.
I agree.
And DeAndre Carter has been a guy that I think Caleb Williams trusts in the passing game.
Yep.
Pretty good in the return game. Just don't ask him to block anymore. That's the thing. Look at Tyler. Look at DeAndre Carter. Do you remember that play? Then the goal line, wasn't it? One of those.
Do you know,
goal from the four plays.
Yeah, I didn't want to say this, but there was also a bad play that Roma Dunze missed a block. I mean, if we're talking about the wide receivers aren't blocking well enough, then you got no hope at all.
Well,
because the offensive line can't block.
If you have to rely on your wide receivers to block well enough to have a running game, it says everything about your running
game. And if you're on the goal line and your slot receiver isn't picking up the right block, guess what? You got the wrong play being run.
Yes.
That's it. As simple as that. Why not take some of these guys that are just standing around the sideline and put them in as extra linemen in those situations?
Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. We've got Dan Wiederer.
Yes.
He's going to join us next. We'll ask him some of these questions. What is the mystery of Keenan Allen? Does he have any insight into it? And really, why are they overloaded with offensive linemen that they don't seem to use or can't play?
Good questions.
We'll talk to Dan next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you've got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast with our own David Haw.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our buddy Dan Wiederer, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out at aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How are you, bud?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, we're kind of debating what has gone wrong thus far. And I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and ask you about Justin Fields. I'm not going to ask you about Jaden Daniels. I'm only concerned with the Bears, but why did they throw the ball so much? What the hell was that?
I was bothered by it in the first half, Mully, just knowing what we knew going into that game and the need to not only try to establish the run, but to stick to it if it wasn't working. And I think it was late in the first half. They were up at like 24 pass attempts and 18 runs. And it's just not what you wanted going into that game. And obviously in the second half, when you're chasing and you're in a lot of those two-minute operation situations, your passing numbers are going to go way up and the numbers are going to look a little bit inflated. But even early in the game, there just wasn't the success with it. There wasn't the dedication to it. They haven't been able to get it unlocked. And it better come soon because it's putting a little bit too much pressure on your rookie quarterback too soon in his career to try to carry this load.
So, Dan, you know that I agree with that, and I think everybody understands the need to run the football. My question would be, as you think about this more, is why everybody is so surprised. The Bears talked all offseason about, when they talk about their offense, all the weapons that they have and the wide receiving trio, when they bring in Caleb Williams with his arm talent and his generational ability, all those things, and then we're surprised, and I'm caught myself into this too. It's like, they need to run the ball. Why aren't they running the ball better? Well, they never really gave us the idea that they would, did they? Shane Waldron came from Seattle because, why did he leave there? Because he didn't run the ball enough. I wonder if we're all victims of being duped in the offseason into thinking that the Bears are going to be something they're not.
Well, I don't think anyone was expecting them to be a team that was going to run it 50 times a game and have like some 1980 style offense here. But you have to have balance. You have to have an ability to unlock some things in your play action game, an ability to get that run going in a way that makes everyone feel the rhythm early in a game. And they haven't got that done yet. I think one of the answers that struck me from Caleb Williams at the end of his post game press conference on Sunday afternoon was him just talking about the need to adapt. And then along with that, I think he used the phrase, the need for constant communication. And I hope he's at the forefront of that, encouraging his coaches, encouraging his teammates to be very vocal about what they want in this troubleshooting effort, because we all can acknowledge troubleshooting is necessary. And hopefully they are on that same page as they progress into this week. Because, guys, this Rams defense that they're about to face, not that good either. They can be exploited pretty easily as well. And so you better just be on top of it, so that you put yourself in position to succeed on Sunday afternoon.
Well, I mean, they ran for 63 yards. They played a team that was giving up 234 yards a game on average, and they ran for 63 yards. And I guess it wasn't just that they ran for 63 yards. When I lost my book I was keeping, when I threw it in the air and tossed my pen across the room, was when they lined up at the line of scrimmage and they handed off to DJ Moore on an end around and lost 4 yards or something. I couldn't believe it. You run the ball down their throat. How hard is that? That is what they can't defend. And by the way, DeForest Buckner is out of the game.
Yeah.
It just made zero sense.
And that's why Sunday's loss stung the way that it did, because that you were staring at a game that was right there in front of you. You're playing an opponent that was probably inferior talent-wise. They were missing one of the best defensive players. They had a young quarterback, who's got about 6 or 7 starts of experience, who gave you 2 gifts, and you somehow walked out of there with a loss. And you walked into halftime, and David and I have talked about this extensively since Sunday afternoon, 0 points at halftime, despite the way you moved the football. Unforgivable. And that stuff comes back to bite you, and it comes back to haunt you, and you're just hopeful that a loss like that can be made up somewhere along the line with a win that you play above your head and you beat a superior opponent. Because if not, for a team that's going to be kind of on that fence of being in the wild card chase all year, if things go well, you're going to be really, really regretful of some of the opportunities you let slip away.
All right, Dan, you're good at putting things into perspective and providing some context here. So obviously we're in the midst of Justin Fields and the Steelers starting 3-0. Jaden Daniels realistically has outplayed the quarterback chosen before him in the draft. And those comparisons to Caleb Williams can get loud in a football city like Chicago, and certainly at a place like Hallis Hall. What effect, if any, will that have on Caleb Williams? What do you expect to hear from the quarterback when he talks today? And will you ask him about this effect on his rookie season?
About Jaden Daniels and Justin Fields?
Yes.
No, there's no chance I'll ask him about that. It is irrelevant to Caleb Williams and his growth process. It's a great thing for national pundits to get on TV every morning while you're eating breakfast and shout at each other about the regret the Bears should have. Caleb Williams is... flight for takeoff is right on schedule. He's playing well for a guy who just played his first regular season game 17 days ago. You're seeing progress in the way he processes, the way he's acclimating to the speed of what he's seeing from opposing defenses. I have very few worries that he is going to be the major problem of the Chicago Bears football team this season or beyond. It's September. Like, let's revisit some of these Jaden Daniels, Justin Fields conversations in mid-November and see where everybody's at when the sample size is larger and we're not all sort of playing the prisoner of the moment game of reacting to grand levels on what just happened this past Sunday. Accumulate a whole bunch of games and sample size and then evaluate it side by side and take it from there. But I don't know. Some of that conversation, David, to me is just silly.
We had a long conversation yesterday with Dave Wannstedt, and he made a point that I thought was an excellent one. He talked about some of the running backs that he's been around and how you love to get those guys lathered up. And the more lathered up they get, the better they are. And it made me wonder why Khalil Herbert was their short yardage guy. Is that because of some package of plays they plan on running? Roshon Johnson had come into the game and he got them a first down to get to that point. Why not let him run at the goal line. He's already been in the game. He's already bruised up a little bit. He's already going downhill. What was the point of switching out running backs? And we won't even get to the fourth down play because that was horrible. But I'm just curious, why not line up and try to beat them, you know, the old Wilson enema, right down their throats with a guy that's in the game that just got a first down?
Right. And to your point, Molly, Roshan was the guy that had run with the sort of play style that you're seeking. It's just that tenacious physical running style that you feel. And then when you get a 4-yard run or a 6-yard run and you see the way he's running the football, it gives your lineman a little energy. It gives your offense a little juice. And all of a sudden you're able to go there. I think they got trapped down there in the low red zone of trying to find looks, right? You know, something that they could do to exploit the Colts defense, where I'm a big advocate of just have something that you do really well. And no matter what defense they play against you, you know that you're going to do it better than them, particularly when you're at the 1-yard line. We're talking about getting 1 yard. You better have something in your playbook that isn't dependent on what the opposing defense plays, you know, like just do something really well. I mean, run play action there. Boot Caleb out to the right and give him a read where he's either throwing to a wide open tight end in the flat or he's running in for a touchdown. But just do something other than a pistol formation where the ball is going to your tailback, you know, 10, 11 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he's trying to catch it when 4 of your linemen are already on the ground and there's, you know, 5 defenders corralling around him. I mean, it's not going to work. And so, like, find that play style. I'd be surprised that they didn't get Roshan a little more run this week because I think he was encouraging with the extended action he did have. But to your point about what Dave said about getting the lather, these backs have to feel a rhythm in the game. They have to feel involved. And so you have to figure that out. That's Shane Waldron, and it's by extension Matt Eberflus allowing that message to get through.
Dan, against the Texans, there were two really questionable challenges by Matt Eberflus. Against the Colts, he burned a timeout because he wasn't ready to go for two or call for the two-point conversion. Because of those two things back-to-back happening in losses, what has it done to maybe your view of how well Matt Eberflus can multitask and manage the game on Sundays?
No, I mean, it's heightened the scrutiny on whether your head coach has the ability to handle the game operation in a successful manner. I mean, we talked about this division, and you talk about the coaches that are in this division and what each one of those guys brings, from Kevin O'Connell to Dan Campbell to Matt LaFleur. And so you want Matt to be more than a guy that can call a good defense for you. You want him to be a guy that can position his offensive coordinator to put together a successful game plan, that can handle some of the twists and turns within a game. And that error on Sunday after the touchdown is, I mean, that's inexcusable. That's just something that can't happen. They didn't score a 58-yard touchdown there. It was from the 1-yard line. You know, those conversations should have been happening for 3, 4, 5 plays in advance about, okay, not only we're going for two here, but here's the play we're going to have dialed up once we score. And so those type of operational errors, particularly for a team that doesn't have a real wide margin for error but does have playoff aspirations, inexcusable. And they have to be put under the microscope, and they have to be talked about that way.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy. We'll be listening to the Take the North podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Talk to you later.
Looking for a cheerful week next week. All right.
Yeah, we'll be much happier. That's guaranteed. Hey, it's Mully and Haw. We're live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. And we want to thank the fine folks at Schmaltz Deli for providing our breakfast, us and the listeners. And check out Schmaltz Deli in Lyle. You can get out there. It's off Ogden Avenue in Lyle, and it's family-owned and operated with roots in authentic, traditional-style Jewish delis. Make sure you check out that. They're spreading deli goodness everywhere. It's Mully and Haw. We got our buddy KC Johnson next, getting ready for the bull season with KC next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
KC Johnson.
Kobe White, pull up three over Karis LeVert and nails it.
Chicago Bulls insider from Chicago Sports Network.
I've covered the NBA for a long time.
KC Johnson with Mully and Haw.
Bulls.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend KC Johnson. And KC, we are on the cusp of it. Another season. this will be an interesting one. Could be a little bit different. Everybody kind of figuring it's going to be about rebuilding. It's going to be about player development. But there's also some veteran status involved in this thing. There's a 10th overall pick. Or what is it? Top 10 protected.
Top 10 protected.
I think there's a lot of interest.
It's something you don't want to bring up in your preseason expectations, but it is a reality this season.
Yeah.
Especially with Zach LaVine coming back and how he fits. Everybody wonders that.
Yeah, you mentioned some veteran talent on this team. I think you have a two-time All-Star in this roster in Zach LaVine. And by the way, whoever did the open, nice work getting the Chicago Sports Network in there because I have a new employer.
Nice job.
And it's great to be here. I did not know I was going to be in a live performance studio, so very cool to see a live audience. And
well,
I also think
TV guys are ready for that.
I also think it's fitting that we're in a performance studio because I'm the opening act for the Bulls Brass.
There you go. That's right.
I should be
that's
like booed
right.
off
there's,
the stage.
There's a guitar hanging on the wall. I mean, we can put that to use if you want.
But Zach, to me, is obviously the focal point going into training camp. There are plenty of storylines, but to me, there is none bigger than Zach LaVine. I put out on Twitter, because right now I don't really have an outlet to write, we'll be launching October 1st, but I don't have an outlet yet, that he was one of the first back for these optional workouts post-Labor Day with the team, which is obviously a good sign. I've always said you don't have to worry about Zach LaVine's professionalism. He's going to be professional. He certainly cares for people like Coby White. He wants to see them succeed. I think where it could get messy, in fact, I think where it will get messy is on the court. I'm less worried about Zach LaVine off
the
court.
How so? Because, look, DeMar DeRozan isn't here, as you know. There's still shots that he would take that now have to be taken.
It's just, to me, it's this. And you're right, because, first of all, Zach fits the way Billy wants to play, which is more up-tempo. Josh Giddey with the ball in his hands, Zach fits that. I just don't see to me, it's conflicting goals. All these young players you need to develop with Zach LaVine sitting there, a two-time All-Star, trying to restore his standing in the game. To me, those are just two conflicting goals. I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before. That's where my focal point is going to be going into this season.
Is it possible we're talking about like two different seasons, like a season where you begin and you're trying to rehab the reputation of a player who is on the trading block, where maybe Vooch is another guy you could trade, where you've got them kind of leading the team until you get to the trade deadline and then you have a different team playing? Is that too simplified?
No, it's not. And it certainly could be a way that the season unfolds, is that could be the storyline. Because look, make no mistake about it. You're going to hear Billy and AK talk nice about Zach, and there's no ill will. I mean, they like Zach personally, but I'm just saying.
Thanks for the preview.
No, I'm just saying, like, if you think they're not still trying to trade him at some point.
Oh, no, I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that contract is a problem. And I'm sure he needs to prove a little something in order for someone to want to take all of that on, right?
Right.
And I mean, coming back from an injury, he's got a very rich contract, and you know, you want value for him. I asked David, is there any chance that he doesn't start? Is there any chance they could bring him off the bench? I don't think that's the way they'll do it. And I don't think it's a good idea. But I'm just wondering what their priority is.
So two things to that. Number one, I'd be stunned.
Yeah.
And number two, Billy Donovan will be in the seat in about 10 minutes. No, but to your point, like Billy's a player's coach, and he always seeds the veterans. He loves veterans, okay? So I just don't see that. I mean, this is a two-time All-Star
who
until last season was one of the most efficient offensive players in the NBA over a three-season run. He was on the ascent, winning that gold medal with Team USA, taking a defensive-minded role for Greg Popovich, drawing praise from Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich for his role on that Olympic team. He was on the ascent. He was on the Jamal Murray track.
I will always
and then last season, it just went all off the rails.
Yeah, because doesn't it surprise you, you've said this before, how people talk about Zach LaVine in this town, given what he has accomplished and the type of player he is. All right, let's go to how the Bulls are going to stop anybody, or if they can. Alex Caruso, gone. Andre Drummond, gone. Who's going to protect the rim, and how do the Bulls survive defensively?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because for two seasons in a row, they've largely focused on defending the paint and conceding the three-point line. They've ranked 29th and 30th in three-point shots allowed the last two seasons. And two seasons ago, even with a 29th-ranked defense allowing the three-point shot, they were fifth overall in defense. So it can be done. Obviously, Caruso being gone is a big part of it. I think you're going to see a focal point where you're going to be more trying to guard the line, so you're going to be more perimeter-based. Patrick Williams obviously is going to be a big part of mm-hmm. that and needs to be healthy and show he can, you know, step up defensively. But certainly they're going to be defensively challenged in a lot of games, especially if you're starting that lineup that we all think they're going to start of Giddey, White, LaVine, Williams, and Vucevic.
How does
Bozelas?
Yeah, how does it,
does he start in the G League?
Fit in?
See, now you got mad.
I don't think
I
he starts
question.
In the G League. I also don't. I'm not 100% sure he's going to be in the rotation start. I could be
how
wrong.
Many
and
are
I think
in
that's going to be a storyline.
How many?
Well, I think this season, because you have so many young players you need to develop. Billy usually likes to go nine. I'm excited to hear what Billy's going to say to you guys.
Yeah.
But he usually likes to go nine. I think with all the young players you have to develop, with winning maybe not as much of a priority as the last few seasons with that draft pick protection, I think he goes 10 for sure. I mean,
wow.
you got a lot of people you need to develop. Julian Phillips, Dalen Terry, Matis Buzelis, who Patrick Williams still needs to develop.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of people that are on the development stage.
How does Jalen Smith fit into the fit?
Oh, he's definitely.
He's
offensively. What do you think?
He's a rotation lock. To me, the rotation locks beyond the presumed starting lineup I threw out throughout are Ayo Dosunmu, Jalen Smith, and one other one.
Torrey Craig? Buzelis?
It's one of those power fours, Craig, Buzelis, or... yeah, so there are not a lot of locks.
Julian Phillips?
I think, yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. You got a lot of young guys you got to develop.
So when camp starts, what's Lonzo Ball's role on this team, and what will he be? How active will he be?
Oh, that's another lock if he's healthy, I think, is Lonzo Ball in the rotation.
Is he in a minutes limit?
No, in the rotation? I'm not talking about starting, yeah.
No, but is he in a minutes limit? I mean, can he?
Yeah, absolutely, he's going to be on a minutes
like
limit.
Like how strict?
I think it's going to be very strict. And I think you're going to see him taking days off in training camp. I mean, look, he's trying to do something almost unprecedented. He hasn't played an NBA game in over 2.5 years. He's gone through 3 knee surgeries, including a cartilage transplant. I mean, the fact that we're even at this point talking about him being a participant in training camp is a testament
to him.
That's
a surprise.
It's a testament to him, his love for the game. Mm-hmm. Everybody's rooting for this guy, and everyone saw at his best what he can do for this Bulls team. And it's just a shame that it's gone the other way. But for him to even salvage another part of his career would be a great storyline.
All right, we'll let you go, KC. We're going to bring in AK and Billy. I'm just curious if I asked you, who's going to be the guy that steps up, the surprise player, the guy that we don't see coming? Is there such a person?
I would probably focus on either Kobe or Giddey. Giddey wouldn't really be a surprise in the sense that he started 80 games for the number one seed in the West last year.
Right.
But I think Bulls fans are going to be surprised at how talented this guy is. And then I still think Kobe has another level to get to.
Really?
This dude,
oh, that's good.
I everything about this guy is about looking inward, taking ownership, wanting to improve. You keep doubting that guy, he keeps going to another level. I think Kobe's going to take a jump this
year.
I think he can be an all-star player in this
league
at some
point. What would be the expression on your face if somebody said the Bulls would win 34 games this year?
Is AK here yet?
No, that's doubt then. That's doubt and skepticism, I think. Do you guys too many?
I've got him around 30, and I'm probably on the high end. What's the over-under you guys put it on?
28.5, according to... 27.5 was the over-under. It's gone up a game.
I'm terrible at predictions, but I'm going 30 and 52.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the over.
I went 32.
I went 34.
I was
too
shot out of a cannon. 34 is insane.
All right.
Okay. 32 is genius.
All right.
No, that's not true.
All right,
we got the Bulls brass on the way. Thank you, KC. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.